Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
And good morning and welcome to Happy Hour. Yes, we're already happy. Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbor.
See what happened?
Like
crazy.
Yep, and Carol Pesci and myself. It's another Sunday morning here on 92.9 WBPM. Thank you so much for joining us. And hello, ladies. Are we doing okay today? Now, you said, actually, when I first walked in the door that I was going to be shocked.
Yeah, yeah.
Just
you're not going to believe it.
Absolutely astounded.
Here's why.
Go ahead.
This never happens.
No.
It's rare. It's like the purple moon or orange moon or blood moon or whatever they call it.
A Yeti.
Yeti.
You know,
not
finding
not the
a Yeti
dumb,
and a
new, dumb,
Bigfoot,
expensive,
you know,
drink things. Oh, yeah. I thought you meant the other dumb, overpriced drinkware. But yeah, so this never happens. Like a comet that's going to come along once every, I don't know.
And crash
so
into the earth
this.
And destroy
get
it.
Get this rare event that we're dealing with this morning. Jonna is agitated.
I know.
That never happens.
Who would have thunk?
It never happens. She always comes in here like daisies floating around her head and happy and smiling.
And even after both of us complimented you on how good you look these days,
and I
especially
really
in that particular
that.
Dress,
because of the
you're
WW.
Still agitated.
Well, you know, it takes a little while for the agitation to wear off. It's like an itch.
Well, we're your tonic.
You are. You are. And unfortunately, I can't even talk about the reason why I'm agitated.
Which, there's something wrong with this picture for you, for your sake.
I know.
Because, like, when you need to vent and you want somebody to say, you know, because it's not even like you don't want anybody to fix it. You want somebody to say, wow, I get it. Yeah, you have every right to be aggravated.
Yeah.
And you can't do that.
Can't do that this morning. But fortunately, I have a couple of other things that are getting under my skin.
And let's just say that's the perils of being an attorney, because
that
you
is,
can't talk about
yeah.
it.
And it is
exactly.
one thing there, audience, you know, if you're tuning in for the first time, always know that if there does come a situation where Jonna can't talk about a particular agitation, she always has backups. You know, it's kind of like I always have a backup pirate's hat in my car,
right?
Just in case.
How bad
Jonna always has a backup agitation
backups.
To tell us the story.
Well, and this one is really apropos because, okay, so a couple of
let
thoughts.
Me guess.
What?
It involves a restaurant in New York City.
Oh, no. Oh. No, no, no. This involves, well, as you guys know, I'm the timing of the show will be a little bit off, but I'm taking a trip. I haven't taken any sort of quote vacation in a while, and I'm going to take 4 days and do a little traveling and come back. And I'm going to be doing that traveling on a plane. And ordinarily, when I come in here and I'm thinking of things.
We had this whole sock discussion last week because you got to go through security with bare feet, and we were coaching you on wearing socks.
Right.
Continue.
Okay. Normally, when I think of things that I want to discuss on the air, sometimes, believe it or not, I will avoid those topics that cause me to say to myself, self, if I talk about this and I tell people how I really feel,
they think I'm an a-hole. and you know what?
That never happens either.
Nine
out of 10 times, I will avoid such topics. Today is number 10. All right. So I want your opinion on this, and I will give you mine. You give me yours, I'll give you mine. I was listening. Do you guys, you know, we're all, well, two of us are Bravo fans here. And there's a show on Bravo called Flipping Out. Jeff, he's like a real estate house flipper.
I can't keep track of them all.
Anyway. His name is Jeff. I can't. I don't know why I don't know his name. Anyway, he's got a radio show, and he also has a really bad attitude. Like, the reason they call the show "Flipping Out" is because sometimes he literally
Isn't
does.
The guy that fires everybody.
Yes,
he's really tall
yeah.
and obnoxious.
And yeah,
okay.
and he recently has a baby girl. I don't know if he adopted. And anyway. Jeff Lewis, thank you very much. All right, so anyway, so he's got a radio
who you're
show.
You're thinking.
He's got a radio show, and he was talking about a situation, and it's apropos since I'm getting on a plane. I'm like, oh my goodness, if this happened to me, what would I do? Here's a scenario, and I want to ask you guys what you would do.
We're ready.
He actually was a friend of his, but we'll say it was him. You know, he bought a couple of plane tickets. He was getting on a plane. He went to go sit in his seat. He specifically wanted to sit on the aisle, which I can relate to because if I have to pee, I don't want to be tripping over people, especially people I don't know if you're traveling alone. He specifically got an aisle seat. When he got to his seat, there was a little three-year-old child sitting in it.
Well, we're off to a good start.
But wait, it's not what you think. So the little three-year-old child is sitting in the seat that he purchased, and in the next to the three-year-old child was the three-year-old child's mother. And the three-year-old child's mother looked at him and said, obviously, my daughter's in your seat because when we booked it, they didn't put us together, and I really want to sit next to my three-year-old child. Now, in order for Jeff Lewis to say, of course you want to sit next to your child, I'll switch with you, he would have had to sit in a middle seat on a three-hour flight. Question is, what would you do? Carol?
What?
Well, would you give up your aisle seat that you paid for? Or would you... To sit in a middle seat? I'm not trying to give you a hint on what I would do by the tone in my voice.
Well, here's the conundrum there, right? Mm-hmm. There's really no way to get out of that without being an a-hole.
Well, there because, is one way. Well,
you are right.
Because the mother knew darn well, when you book your seats,
right.
And I don't know that that is even allowed for a child that young to be sitting in a seat that's not next to mama. She just figured, I'm going to make it.
That was my first question, is how does this situation arise in the first place?
Right.
How does an airline say that it's okay to take a three-year-old and sit them by themselves in a middle seat, by the way, yeah, next to two strangers?
I've seen it happen. Like, because if you're booking a full flight and it's like, pick your seats, and the only seats available are, you know, a middle seat, one row up, and another middle seat behind you.
That mother made it his problem, and it's not his problem. I would make it the airline's problem. I would be compassionate, and this is what I'm saying, right? Mm-hmm. If I was in the situation, maybe I wouldn't have the guts to do that, but to say, I'm sorry, that's unfortunate. This is the seat I booked. How about we get the stewardess over here to help you figure something out?
Yeah, but you see now, the problem is...
I don't know if I'd have the guts, though, in person to do that.
You have a choice here, okay?
Jerk or no jerk.
Well, no, there's the other thing, though, too, is you can be the jerk, but then you got to sit next to mom for 3 hours.
Who's going to make your life miserable?
Oh, you know?
Yeah.
So,
or the kid for three hours.
They're not going to sit the kid without the mother. They're going to find somebody else.
In my mind, I'm going to say, yeah, that's okay. Just do it, take it, you know what? Buy me lunch when we get to the airport or when we get to the terminal.
Oh, I'm fine. Think that mother's going to buy you lunch?
I'm kidding. It doesn't matter. I'm just going to say, I mean, she might offer something for all I know.
I got a plan
but,
B.
But I would, I would have to say, because there is no win. And it's not fair of the mother to have done that.
No. Because, that's right. She made it his problem.
Right. And, you know, maybe you mention that to her at the same time. Say, listen, you know what? You can have the seat. But future reference, what you have done is just not fair to whoever it was that booked this seat. And then you walk away. You grab that middle seat. So you don't got to sit next to mom for 3 hours and have her fuming at you for 3 hours because her kid is in another seat. And then you just deal with
it. So wait a minute. So you think that people actually care if you're making a valid point? Curly?
You can't see this, but I had my hand raised. Yeah. Here's another somewhat alternative. Mm-hmm. Call the stewardess over. And as that person who paid for the seat, I'm willing to move if it helps, but I would like a complimentary ticket because this is a seat I paid for. You know how when you get bumped,
yes,
and they give you a free flight?
Yes. So I like that plan, and here's why. Because I don't think an airline is going to give you a complimentary ticket when they're not bumping you. But by doing that, you now put the problem where it belongs.
In the airline.
On the airline.
Yeah.
So that you can kind of not be the jerk. you know, you're like, hey, I'm willing to do it, but you need to compensate me
because I paid for this ticket.
I'm not sitting next to Tweedledee and Tweedledum when I have a bladder that's just not going to hang for 3 hours. Right? I'm just not doing it. And I paid for this seat. So, but it does belong with the airline. And the airline should, like, and especially recently with all the problems they have. When you're traveling, I've never traveled with a child, so I don't know if they ask you. They must ask you the age.
They have to. Yeah.
And, I mean, why can't they go so far as to say if, I mean, they can usually rearrange when you get there, right? Like, they can maybe put
find somebody
to
who's
kids.
Not a jerk who will move.
But they should be doing that so that you don't have to ask another paying customer to do your bidding. And if they can't accommodate you, then guess what? Then you got to go on a plane where they can accommodate right. you when you book your ticket. I would
so
love
how did he handle it?
So, and it was actually, so I'm saying it's Jeff, but it was actually Jeff's boyfriend took the middle seat and didn't complain. And so here's the thing that was getting my goat. So he's like, you know, I ate it. I went in the middle seat. I didn't get any compensation. I just did it because I didn't want to be a jerk is what his boyfriend was saying. And everybody on the show was like, oh, of course, that's the right thing to do. That's what you should have done. Anyway, if you did anything else, you would have been a jerk. Mm-mm. And they were all moms. And I'm in my car listening to this. And, you know, and I have some of my best friends are moms, but I'm not a mom. So maybe I'm missing that one little gene that would have me
of
going,
compassion.
Rah, rah, rah. That rah-rah gene. And I'm like, no way. It would have been so incredibly uncomfortable, so I'll give myself credit for realizing it would be uncomfortable. It's not like I'd be like Grinch, like, hey, kid, get out of my seat. But I would not sit in a middle seat for love or money if I paid to not do that. Mm-hmm. I just wouldn't. And now that I've spoken this, when I get on a plane in 24 hours, right, the gods are going to punish me.
Oh, I can't wait.
By making that happen.
You better be texting me until the last minute you can, because I know there's going to be a story.
After the week I had, the God should have me sitting next to Bradley Cooper. You know, helping him sign his divorce papers or something.
Well, I'm still I'm still annoyed at the mom for making it a situation in the first place.
But I mean, that is
incredibly selfish. Well, especially when you know how long has she known that she was going to do that?
They either assigned those seats at the time you book. Sometimes
right.
they do.
Right.
And she knew it.
Yep.
Or they didn't assign, so when she got there, they assigned the seats, and she didn't say to the stewardess that assigned those seats right then, this is my child. She knew this was an issue.
Right. She chose to get on
and make it somebody else's
right.
problem.
And she couldn't have called the airline a couple of days ahead of time and say, listen, do you have two together, by the way? I was forced to buy two tickets separate for myself and my three-year-old. And what if the gentleman had been there in the first place? Was she going to get on and say, do you mind moving so my three-year-old can have your seat?
That was going to be my next question. Did it matter at all that he got on after? Because
You're an attorney. Possession is 9 times.
Yeah, the law.
Law.
Right? And that aisle seat is very valuable. But when I recently booked the trip that I'm going on, it said, pick your seats. And if I may, when I was booking the flights, because I am traveling with somebody, I actually forewent certain flights because we couldn't sit together. And I'm traveling with an adult. So, like, you know, if I didn't like those seats, I'm like, well, let me check a different flight. Maybe they have better. I was my own travel agent. And I did that consciously. So,
interesting discussion.
But
the truth is, I probably would have just sat in the middle and not said anything. I wouldn't have been happy.
I never would have done that.
Like, because I'm not usually quick. I can, like, think about things after the fact. Like, it took me a minute to come up with the solution to make it the airline. Like, give me a free ticket and I'll move.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I would have.
I would have stopped short. Like, I wouldn't have picked the young child up by her diaper and her little polka-dotted striped shirt and moved her. But I would have very nicely said, you know, no kids. If somebody, why don't you get on the loudspeaker? If somebody wants to give me their aisle seat, I'm happy to change different aisle, different row. But I ain't sitting in the middle. And that's a big...
Nobody puts baby in the middle.
With Tweedle. Dean on one side and Tweedle Dumb on the other.
Like, this is how big of a jerk I am. I'm sitting here saying that I would displace a three-year-old so that she couldn't sit with her mother.
Why? So you could pee easily.
So I don't have to interrupt somebody to go pee. Oh, God, I'm just horrible.
You know, and the worst part is, it's a 3-hour flight. You would probably only need to stand up and interrupt them once.
No, because it's psychological. If I knew I was stuck in a middle seat, I'm going to have to go like every 20 minutes, whether I really got to go or not.
So you'd be Bugs Bunny and past them like every 20 minutes. Pardon me, excuse me,
pardon me, excuse me. Yeah.
Yeah. Spielberg.
That's
wouldn't that, what? Oh, you know what would be funny? This would be karma. You switch seats to the window seat in that row where you were supposed to be on the aisle. Like somehow, like that person switches with you.
And you just make a move all
And then you make
times.
The move every 20 minutes. Pardon me, excuse me, pardon me, excuse me, pardon me, excuse me. Anyway, okay, so let's hope, knock on wood, that doesn't happen to me.
We'll hope for you.
So what'd you decide for your feet on your flight?
Did you buy new socks?
Are you going to wear socks? So you don't have to...
Are you going to wear actual comfortable footwear for a 3-hour flight?
This is what I decided. I'm going to try to go actually with like a slide, like kind of like a shoe I'm wearing now, which is one that easily slides on and off so that you can see I'm not hiding anything. And then I'm just going to try to pre-check in and hope that maybe they don't make me take my shoes off.
I think you need to put a little pair of socks in your bag as a backup plan.
You think so?
Yeah. Yes.
All right. So,
yes.
All right. Okay. You know what I'm going
to
do?
And if that happens and they tell you you're going to have to take your shoes off, because I think there's a good chance you're going to have to, mm-hmm. I would like a picture of your feet with the socks on once you pass through
security. You guys remember the movie Airplane?
Please.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Every time the main character sat down and he would start talking to somebody that was on the plane, they would feign killing themselves in one way or another. You know what I mean? Like he sat next to one person who was Harry Carey, and he has another person who I can't remember exactly what. But anyway, that's for you all out there that are listening, as I'm listening to this conversation, that's what I'm doing right now. Okay? I'm thinking out different ways to off myself right now so I don't have to listen to the silliness of this conversation.
Actually, people tune in for the silliness. And can I just add one thing? Frank Berry, do you have...
Change it to Silly Hour.
Yeah, that's what we should do.
We can make segments. Silly segment, stupid question segment.
Yeah, I like that. And that just kind of comes naturally.
And we'll come up with a list of stuff right now, like all the things that Jonna will do to not carry socks.
She's going to put socks in her bag.
No, you know what I was going to do? I was going to do my least favorite look in the world. You know those shower slides that men wear? Those ugly, they're just slides. They're like rubbery shoes. And
yes,
they're big.
Yes, I know them.
And then when they wear them with ankle socks.
Yes, I've seen that, yeah.
Okay. How much would you pay me to shuffle into Newark Airport?
I would pay you a good dollar if the socks were black.
And your two tight sweatpants and your...
Oh, my God. If you guys would pay me like, I don't know, like $5 each...
I'll pay you 10 and cover Frank and
every day for the rest of my life, then I would do it.
And I would say it's got to be black socks.
Oh, God. I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about next week. So there you have it.
All right. So who do we got today there, Miss Pesky?
We have actually a local. And she's going to be a new celeb because she's a new author. Her name is Susan Krebs. And she is the author of a brand new book called ES Thinking. And the subhead is, it's not too long, Frankenberry, you're going to like it. Extraordinary Living Through Ego Spirit Thinking. She is the co-founder of something called Ego Spirit Thinking. So many of us are told, oh, the ego is no good. It serves no purpose.
Right.
People have a big ego.
Bad.
You're supposed to transcend it. She comes along and says, why are you fighting against something that's part of you? How about engaging it? How about looking what it's there to serve you and use it to your benefit? So she's had a tough upbringing. She's come a long way. She's a really cool chick, and she's got some words of wisdom coming up. So Susan Krebs, author of ES Thinking, is coming up next.
All right, so that's what we've got on the way. This is Happy Hour with Jonna Spielbor, Carol Pesci, and we will return. Stick with us. This is 92.9 WBPM.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
This is Happy Hour with John Spilbore and Carol Pesci, and we're back for our second segment, which, of course, is always the segment where we get a chance to talk to interesting people, including today.
Yeah, and I got one. And here's the cool, extra cool, two really cool things about this. Number one, she's local, which we like when we can have our local friends and new celebs on. And two, maybe I'm a bit partial, but you're going to see as you talk to her. She's really, really smart and very cool. This is the author of a latest book published by Little Pink Press.
Who is the publisher for Little Pink Press but yours truly?
But I love this girl. We have on the line with us Susan Krebs. She is the author of the brand new book, ES Thinking, Extraordinary Living Through Ego, Spirit, Thinking. And she is a certified practitioner of neuro-linguistic programming. You may have heard it abbreviated as NLP. We're going to ask her what that is. And she supports the Princeton Center for NLP and is an assistant trainer. And she's also a helping professional advisor. She is the co-founder of the practice of ES Thinking. We're going to find out what that is in a minute. And she's also a successful licensed speech pathologist. I am so impressed that I just said that line perfectly. Because she might need to coach me if I didn't. She has over 20 years of experience. Experience working with children with multiple handicaps and learning disabilities. She's a well-respected member of several speech, language, and hearing associations in New York and holds a master's degree of science in communication disorders. Susan Krebs, congratulations on your new book and welcome to the show.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Isn't it cool when you hear your own bio and like, wow, I kind of sound impressive.
Yeah, I'm like, whoa, who is that?
So let's start, Susan. Give us the nutshell. I know that you've written a whole book about it, but what is ES Thinking?
Well, ES Thinking is basically, in a nutshell, it is the process of building a relationship between your ego and your spirit in such a way that life, you know, challenges come up each day. You really take in different strategies to manage those challenges with a lot more ease. And when we're managing challenges with a lot more ease, we have a lot more opportunity for, you know, peace and joy and pleasure in life instead of being stuck in, you know, a lot of minutia that we can sometimes get caught up in.
Well, and here's the fact of life. I mean, we would all love to have a smooth, stress-free life that nothing challenging ever happens, but that's wishing for the impossible. So you come along and say, you know, this is inevitable. We're going to face challenges, little daily annoying challenges, like you can't get the pickle jar open and you want to smash it against the counter. Not that that's ever happened to me. Or major life things. And you're saying, look, we can't avoid those things, but let's learn some tools as to how we can look at and approach when these things do happen.
Absolutely.
So, go ahead.
Oh, no. And, you know, and that's part, like, what's really amazing in part of my own personal growth is recognizing that my desire was this perfect utopia life that I wanted. And that's what I was always striving for. And I was never attaining it. And so that was the hardest part. And once I realized that, okay, pain is inevitable, issues are, you know, going to happen, what am I going to do with it? And that's really when the shifts, you know, began happening.
And she did say shift, ladies and gentlemen.
Shift. Yes, she did.
There was an F there.
Yes, but as a peach specialist.
Yes.
Was that like inevitable? Like that was just going to happen, right?
I do try, instead of saying the curse word, I say holy shift all the time now, when in place of that, because it's really, you know, it's a much better spin on it.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I agree with you there. Anyway. On FM radio, I agree with
fudge.
You.
Yeah, exactly. Come on now.
Yeah, and I am sick of autocorrect saying that I'm ducking mad. Because
I know. I'm never ducking mad.
Nobody's ever a ducking jerk.
That's right.
Yeah.
We all like ducks.
We might duck jerks.
Okay, so Susan, I always like to know with our guests to tell us the backstory. When somebody's written a book, there's always a backstory, and typically that involves some struggle early on. Can you tell us, you went through some difficult experiences early on. Can you share that with us?
Sure. So growing up, I grew up in a household with a very unpredictable alcoholic father who would be violent at times. And, you know, my mom was extremely stressed out, overwhelmed, a lot of anger going on there. And it was really stressful. It was scary. I learned a lot of things growing up in that kind of environment. And also then to top it all off, you know, I was sexually abused as a young child throughout my entire childhood up until I was 13. So, you know, all of those types of, you know, experiences were traumatic at best. And one of the things that I did realize, you know, part of my personality was I was a people pleaser. I wanted to make everybody happy. I wanted everyone around me to be happy. And so having that personality trait mixed in with all of those types of human experiences really was, you know, created a lot of like limiting beliefs, a lot of things that, you know, taught me how to like view the world in a very distorted way.
Well, and this is what we do. We all go through difficult times and experiences.
Right.
And when we're little, even something you could think is insignificant can be a bit of trauma to your system. And then you develop a belief based on that protects you and serves you at that time. But then if it sticks around as an adult, it may not really be serving you. And this is what your book largely is helping people. And I'm going to read a quote from your book that says, ES thinking is not avoiding and putting a Band-Aid on pain, but addressing it. Like, let's go back.
Absolutely.
And we don't have to, and you say that, you don't have to dig up everything that you went through, but you do need to go back and discover what some of these triggers are. And are your responses still serving you today?
Well, and you know, that's what's important also to realize, because I do talk about this in my book, that we each have our own unique story made up of like the human experiences that occur in our lives. But it's not about comparing one to another. I mean, you don't have to have the same experiences that I have in order to be able to get something from this book. Pain is pain regardless of how it was inflicted. You know, shame, guilt, they're all real emotions that we all experience, you know, regardless of what caused you to feel that way. You know, and that's what's really important to understand in my book. My book is not about my story. Those are just the experiences that have happened to us, but it's not who we are. You know, and that's how, you know, how we learn and grow and expand, given everything that has happened to us, is how we define who we are. And that was a big game changer for me, was recognizing that my life experiences were not who I was or who I am.
So then, Susan, I guess this is an opportunity, or the things that people will learn in the book is how we can redefine ourselves. Because I agree with you and Carol, like, we grow up with a sense of what we experience and how we interpret that. But then at some point, I guess if you get uncomfortable as an adult, and who hasn't been uncomfortable about something, right? You get uncomfortable,
right.
And then you have to look back, analyze that, and say, wait a minute, this doesn't define me. I want to redefine myself as someone who's well-adjusted, someone who's happy, someone who doesn't get mad at the pickle jar when it doesn't open, someone who would give up a seat to a three-year-old on a plane.
Exactly. Yeah. And it all really begins with learning about how, when we are in our ego state, you know, when we are, you know, that ego state, you know, most people have heard the term ego and know it's like, but for me, you know, being in your ego state is up in your head. That's those, you know, that voice that just goes on and on and on, and, you know, really like is what's trying to get you to get from point A to point B. And, you know, there's, you know, a lot of our ego gets a lot of bad slack in the world today. It really does. And what my whole perspective on the ego is that it is vital to our human experience. Mm. And it is important because it's giving us the ability to recognize when we're in our ego state, what happens when we're in our ego state, what triggers us, what makes us go ballistic at the pickle jar, what thoughts are going on, what emotions were triggered by that, and then what behavior did those emotions drive in us to act in whatever way it is that we acted. And so, you know, by having that information and taking away any kind of judgment of what our ego is doing, you know, and you're finding out, well, what is the intent behind this? There's a positive intent to everything. So, you know, it's really about, when I talked about building that relationship, part of that is recognizing and increasing our awareness of when we're in the ego state, what is the positive intent behind it? And then now let's see what is we are given. Once we are aware of that, we are given ourselves the opportunity to do things differently.
See, I'm so glad you said that because you're right. The ego gets a bad rap. Like, everybody thinks, oh, the ego is bad. You can't come from a place of ego. But when I look, and maybe I just have a general misunderstanding.
Or a big ego.
Because I think the opposite of having a big ego is being apathetic. And I don't think apathy is good, too. If you just don't give a crap what anybody thinks or mm-hmm. does or says about you, yeah. I don't see that as being incredibly healthy either. There has to be a middle lane. And
right,
I don't
absolutely.
Know what you would call that middle lane.
Yes, thinking.
Or
yeah,
healthy,
hello, you just said it, exactly. Oh. Well, because there's two parts to ES thinking. There's the ego and then there's our spirit. Now, you know, my book is a collection of tools like from a place of spirit and spirituality, but it's not at all religious in nature. So basically our spirit, it can also be thought of as like just our heart space, our the energy flow that's in our body that's like just, that place that's love, you know, that place that is, you know, unconditionally just feeling awe and beauty and acceptance. And so, like, when we look at what the ego is and we explore the ego while through different exercises, we do the same thing for our spirit. So, and really recognizing when are we in touch with our heart space, our core, our, you know, our God, our higher power, you know, there's so many names that you could, it doesn't matter what you call it. I mean, one of the sayings in the book that I absolutely love is that there are many paths up to the top of the mountain, but the view of the moon is the same no matter how you got there. So regardless of what you call it, it's really recognizing the positive intensity behind our ego and what we want. And then dropping into that heart space of ours and recognizing that we can get that from a place of love, and then how to shift so that we're thanking our ego for saying, okay, this is what I want, and how I'm acting in this way is not getting it, you know, getting me that. Wow. So let me drop into my heart space and move towards that with more ease. And then moving back and forth. And so you're going through your day and you're like, oh my God, I am totally in my ego space right now. And you want to say some really nasty things. And it's like taking that break and your awareness. It's increasing your awareness of what's happening. What is it that you really want? Okay, how else can I get that without being in this super reactive place?
You know how so hard just, that is.
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. Let me tell you.
We were just talking about that, too, especially when it comes to Jonas Spielberg.
That ain't easy.
But you know what? And it's, you know, ES thinking is not going to say you're never going to be in ego space. You know, that is not at all what ES thinking is. It's about, like, valuing the ego. So, you know, I'm blowing up, and I'm like, oh, my God, why did I just blow up like that? And then you think about it, and you're like, oh, that's what's going on. It really, it's an introspective journey, this whole process of ES thinking and learning about it and how to shift into ES thinking. It has nothing to do with the people you're around or the story that's happening around you or the situations that you're finding yourself in. It's an introspective journey about going inward and really learning how you do you. Like, okay, so sometimes you're going to blow up. Sometimes you're going to say things that you're going to regret, or you're going to wish you did differently, or you're going to react in certain ways. But it's about your awareness and saying, oh, that's what I really want. Okay, well, how can I do that? And then you learn, and you practice, and you practice, and it gets a little easier, and it gets a little easier. And the beauty with ES thinking is when you do still react from a place of ego, even after practicing and practicing and practicing and practicing, you don't stay stuck in it, and you don't beat yourself up because of it.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting.
And that's the beautiful part.
You reminded me, because what you're talking about, I think everybody in this room has experience, and it does take a little work. It really does.
A jerk.
Yeah, and you just reminded me of something, because part of my own personal evolution, I think, into this space that you're talking about is somebody put something on Facebook that was so apropos, a little meme that said, no response is a response, right?
Yeah.
Mel Robbins posted that, and That's almost lately my mantra, because instead of reacting the way I really want to, either by choking somebody or writing an email telling them that I do want to choke them or somehow,
right.
I take a breath and I'm like, you know what? It ain't about me. It's about them. And then I can move on and you know, do something else and forget about it.
And I was talking to you guys not too long ago about that I've gotten to the point now, too, where the no response, there is an actual literal no response to an email.
Yeah.
You know, I see that email, and that email has just annoyed the crap out of me.
Yeah.
And I know that if I respond to it in the way I want to respond, it's not going to go well. And it's just like, you know what? I'm just going to let them know that I'm over here fuming with no words.
A pause can be very powerful in life. And this is actually something I talked about in my first book, Happy Bitch, is I call it the magical gap. In between that time when something comes at you or something is said or something, you have that moment of pause to say, okay, I get to choose how I respond here. What is it that I want? What is the outcome that I want? And is how I'm about to respond going to get me further from that or closer to that? And this is a big part of what your book ES Thinking is about. Having that presence, having that self-awareness, realizing you have the power to choose. And I say, okay, what do I want? The ego's showing up for a reason here. I'm going to honor how I feel. I'm not going to immediately call myself a jerk and say, oh, I shouldn't feel that way. This is honestly how I feel. What is it? What's triggering that? What do I really want to see happen here? How can I shift myself to get closer to that? Did I just summarize your whole book?
You just did. That was beautiful. That was beautiful.
Done.
Yes. You know, well, because and that awareness and that whole like period of time where you sit there and say like, what am I thinking right now? Because it, part of like the NLP part, you know, that was really, you know, helpful for me is that, you know, thinking about our thoughts, right? And when we can connect with our thoughts, they always trigger some type of emotion. And emotion is what drives our behaviors. So when we're sitting there and we're thinking about and are working on our awareness of how we do us, you just described that. You had these thoughts, okay, you know, you validated how you felt, and then you said, what do I really want? So then you look at, you know, what makes sense, what doesn't. You're looking at your thoughts. You're like, okay, no, this is what I want, and this feeling that I have is what I'm going to have drive my behavior.
You know, I just made a joke to myself in my head when you were talking.
You're amusing yourself.
Yeah, I was amusing myself. I said, my book's going to be called Pump Your Brakes, because if you do take a pause between something that happens that brings up the emotion that you talk about, if you could train yourself to take a break every time, and that break could be a minute, it could be an hour, it could be a day, it could be a week. If you wait long enough, whatever you want to do will feel good, and then you go ahead and do it. In other words, like if I just give you a quick example, I was going to fire a vendor of mine, and not the vendor hasn't done anything wrong. It's just that we've accomplished everything we needed to accomplish. I no need to spend money on this vendor anymore. And the payment for this vendor automatically comes out of my bank account, and I was reminded that I wanted to fire this vendor when the payment automatically came out. And for a second, I was mad. I'm like, oh, darn, you know, I keep spending money for nothing on this person. And I was angry, and I was going to write a quick email to say, hey, I'm done. But I waited, and then, like, a day later, I contacted this vendor. I'm like, you know what? We did great together. We have set out. We've accomplished everything we chose to accomplish. I'm really glad we did business together, and I think our time is done, so I'm going to go ahead and cancel our service. And that felt so good to me. Like, and hopefully to that vendor, too, and I'm just so glad that I hesitated until it felt good, and then I reacted.
Okay, so as your publisher.
Yes, and good friend.
You just said that your title of your book is going to be Pump Your Brakes.
Pump Your Brakes.
And may I suggest what your subhead is?
Oh, please, make it long for Frankenberry, because he loves those long subheads.
At least 15 words, if you could. Yeah. That's what I'm looking for.
All right,
make sure they rhyme or something, too, so he has to stumble over them,
please.
You know, a little bit?
Yeah, she's got the perfect idea.
Okay, so the title of your book is Pump Your Brakes, and your subhead is And Go Full Speed Ahead.
Oh my God!
This is why I'm a publisher.
Nice.
This is why you are you.
Yes.
You got a gift, you. Not you.
No,
you're good.
He does.
All right, we're wrapping up here with Susan Krebs, author of the brand new book, ES Thinking, Extraordinary Living Through Ego Spirit Thinking. One thing I did mention when we introduced you and we didn't do, can you get, what is NLP, if somebody's never heard of it?
Sure.
Neuro-linguistic programming.
No problem. Neuro-linguistic program is basically, it's a variety of strategies utilizing lots of techniques and different modalities. Like there's visual is one modality, auditory is one modality, kinesthetic movement is another modality, and using the power of words to improve or accomplish whatever outcome you want. You know, like really focusing on the use of language in a particular context, so that you can understand it's not what you say, but it's how you say it. Mm. So, you know, really coming using language and different modalities and you know, to get your message, you know, out there. And one of the things when you said that, you know, no communication is communication, there's a lot of different things like that is made up. That you hear about in neuro-linguistic programming. It's really, neuro is the brain, linguistic is words, reprogramming your brain using language. You know, it's super interesting topic, at least as a speech pathologist, I found it was.
If I do say so myself.
Yeah, I gotta say.
Susan Krebs.
Well-rounded.
Thank you so much for taking the time
really
to talk
pleasure.
With us. Congratulations on your new
Thank
book.
Thank you guys so much.
We're all collectively very honored to have you here and proud of you. ES Thinking, Extraordinary Living Through Ego Spirit Thinking by Susan Krebs. Where can people get your book? It's on Amazon, right? BarnesandNoble.com?
Amazon, yep, right. And BarnesandNoble.com.
Very
yeah,
good. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thanks, Susan.
Yes, thank you. Take care.
Thank you very much.
You.
And we've got our third segment of Happy Hour on the way, so stick with us. This is Jonna and Carolyn, myself, and we will be back. You've got 92.9 WBPM.
Live better, laugh harder, love more. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 WBPM.
And we are back once again with Happy Hour here on 92.9 WBPM with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frank and Barry.
So we've got segment number three for you right now. And, of course, usually we thank our guests. And definitely big-time thanks.
She was awesome.
She was great.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. You know what? I had one dumb thing that I didn't tell her on the air that I'll tell you.
A stupid question?
It was just a stupid comment. Because we were talking about how it does take practice to put into practice what she talks about in the book, this ES Thinking. And in my head, I'm like, it's not easy. It's ES. How stupid is that?
Oh, I'm glad you didn't bring that up.
She was really cool. And you know, and I, the books that I've written, I love to deliver something in a very conversational, real way. Like some of the self-help books are phenomenal from a content standpoint, but they're proper and formal and dry. And she's very real and relatable in her book. I love her writing style. And she's just a cool chick. I really like her. So highly recommend her book, ES Thinking, Extraordinary Living Through Ego Spirit Thinking.
And it's really interesting because you know what it reminded me a little of? And if we have any fans of the show listening, do you remember when, I won't remember the guest, but you had brought this up because it was a guest who would discuss, like, instead of, you know how you're a happiness expert and you walked around life thinking, oh, I got to be happy or I'm not being true to myself. I got to be happy all the time. Happy, 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 happy. When the truth of the matter was, sometimes you're not happy.
Yep.
And one of our guests wrote a book where you get to embrace not being happy. You get to embrace having those feelings instead of just pushing them down and shoving them aside so that you can work through them instead of ignoring them. And this reminds me, it seems to me a little bit in that vein. Like your ego is supposed to be, oh, bad ego, ego, ego. Well, you know what? Sometimes it can work for you if you know how to work with it.
That's what she says. It has a positive intent. So rather than fighting against it. So here's, you have the ego thoughts that come up or you have that frustration or aggravation. And then the thoughts come up. And I talk about this in Hello Beautiful. Same thing. And then what we do is think, oh, wait a minute. No, we're not supposed to be like that. So then we have the initial negative thinking, ego thinking, then we pile judgment on top of it. Oh, I shouldn't do that. And then we put more pressure on it. It doesn't help the situation. Mm-hmm. So she comes along and says, just, it's part of you. Ego is a part of being a human. So
yeah,
it actually wants you to succeed. It actually is designed. It wants you to get what you want out of life and be successful. Mm-hmm. It just can be a jerk sometimes. So it's about dialoguing with it and building a relationship with it and then shifting into that spirit space, taking the message from your ego, really, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and then shifting into the spirit space or your heart space, as she calls it, so you can live a more peaceful life.
And really, at the end of the day, isn't that what we want? Like, nobody wants to be aggravated 24/7. It feels good to feel good and be happy.
Yep.
And
oh, I thought you were going to follow that with, though it does feel good to be aggravated because it's a skill. At the same right, time, right. It does feel nice to be calm and happy.
No, it really...
But it also helps not to judge that the normal... It's negative, but I don't even like to use that word. But when those normal human emotions come up on the challenging side, to not beat yourself up for it.
And they are normal, even though that's another... That's what we should do. For an upcoming guest, we need to get somebody show. Who talks about what's normal. And maybe normal's the next taboo word we should be, right? Because normal is what you think it is.
And I forget exactly how she put it, but she talks about it in your book. She's there to help you do you better. So it's not about mm-hmm. doing normal. It's about owning all of you and using what resources you have, even the things that come from the ego state. They're there to serve you, learning how to do you to the best you can.
Right. And there you have it.
Okay.
What?
You're taking notes. Were you taking notes? Let me see your notes. Does it say, do you? Darn it.
No, I was taking notes. Just I wanted to remind myself of how I wanted to say something for the end of the show. And I was listening, and then I'm letting me be me, and I'm doing me, whatever you guys were talking about, because I was certainly paying attention.
And we like when you do you. And I'm going to give you a plug at the moment because we both recognize it. We've said it many times. You are a gifted writer, Frankenberry.
Oh, my
you
goodness.
Have a
well, I appreciate
talent
that.
And a gift.
You got a gift.
And I love that you have been writing more lately in the last few months. And I think mm-hmm. that is so healthy. And we love. We love reading your stuff. So if you want to check out, what's your blog, Frankenberry?
Frankenberry'sAttic.com. It's actually brand new. I moved it over to WordPress. It's very clean looking as opposed to the other one, which was a little busy at Blogger.
And because you're not going to do this, so I'm going to do it for you. If you are inclined to go to Frankenberry's Attic, so just Google Frankenberry's Attic, right?
That's correct. You'll see one that's on Blogger, and you'll see another one that's at WordPress.com.
And you want people to be directed to WordPress.
Right. That's the one I'm moving to now. So that's just the frankenberriesattic.com.
All right. So frankenberriesattic.com. I think you can also get there through Frankenberry's Facebook page. Now, here's the thing, people. No, and I'm being serious here for a minute. Frankenberry is a talented writer. We have a lot of, and you listening probably do have a lot of talented friends too. When you're a talented person and you're working on your craft and nobody gives you feedback, it's a lot like the tree that lands in the forest that nobody hears. It doesn't make a sound.
Yep.
Make some sound. Make some noise. So if you're going to read Frankenberry stuff, which is very entertaining, could you give it a like? Could you give it a little comment?
Yep.
Can you do that just,
It's kind of like an act of kindness.
Yeah.
Like he's having the courage to express
himself out there.
And not everybody can do that. He's using his gifts and his talents. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. more of us need to do that. So give him a like. Give him...
And that's something you do for anybody, for everybody.
Right.
Yes, yes. But it's just nice for people who are putting their talents out there to get some feedback. And it's nice when that feedback is good. If you're going to be some sort of internet troll and say horrible things online, well, then you deserve to die. And that's all I'm going to say. But if you're a nice, kind-hearted person, give a little like now and then.
And it's funny that you mention that because every now and then, I will post some stuff. I don't post as often as other folks do. I know, you post quite often. I've got a buddy of mine from my grad school days who posts on a regular basis some very, very funny stuff, little dialogues between him and his dog and some other things. And but I will feel a little selfish when I post my things, but I don't look at everybody else's. So I make it a point at least once a week to kind of go through and check what everybody else is doing and throw some likes out there if I do like it. I'm not gonna disingenuously like something, but so yes, it's a good point for anybody, just a general point. So,
all right. That
that's all right. A
wrap. I think that's good. And just one more headline in the file of stupid.
Yeah, my favorite file.
It is a fat file, especially these days. A woman in Louisiana is attacked by a camel and saves herself by biting its testicles.
What?
Yes. Come so on. There you go. That's all you. That's all you need is
what
the headline.
State again was it?
Well, take a guess. It wasn't.
Alabama.
It wasn't here
did
in north. It was in Louisiana.
No, you said Louisiana.
Oh yeah, where they have so many camels.
Apparently, in a truck stop petting zoo.
And
his
and
his name was Casper. And
what was she trying to do that she was that close to?
Well, they actually got they got fined, and they got some citations from the cops because apparently they were giving the camel a hard time. Their dog got loose, ran in the enclosure. The woman went in. The camel sat on her, and then the woman to get the camel off of her bit the camel's testicles. But the best part is the guy who owns or runs the truck stop said. The camel was shocked, but probably not hurt, because according to the manager of the truck stop, the woman didn't have any teeth.
Okay.
I call fake
all right.
news.
Okay. There all right. we go. This has been Happy Hour with Jonna Spilborn and Carol Pesci. Thank you so much for tuning in, as you always do, and we'll be back again next Sunday. 8 o'clock is when we do it, so please join us then. For right now, have yourselves a good week.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilborn and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.